turn our attention to the Sermon upon the Mount. It's our series that we've been involved with in Matthew 5, 27 through 32. And what is interesting, we've seen the backdrop in this section of his sermon, where it's interesting because God, Jesus, in these few verses are bringing together God's revelation that's been there for centuries. He's emphasizing also and speaks about the fact that indeed what is the present teaching in his generation about that subject, in this case, adultery. And also, Jesus is expanding on those facts and expanding on those things to deal with the heart before the action of adultery takes place and focuses upon our desires and our lust and the things that come into our heart that we could think about to avoid adultery. No one that practices adultery or fornication, they enter into heaven. We can commit those sins. We ask God to forgive us. And by the blood of Christ, we have our sins cleansed, either by baptism when we become a Christian or by prayer unto God with our confessing and repenting. But he brings centuries together of teaching. And we began to realize, what was God's revelation for centuries? Thou shalt not commit adultery. Seventh commandment. And we began to realize that, well, that's what God has revealed. And so now the teaching is, you've heard it was said, thou shalt not commit adultery. And we read that in Exodus 20 and verse 14. But what, did it change maybe with a new generation? In Deuteronomy, the fifth chapter, and verse 18, we'll find that you're not going to commit murder, you're not going to kill, but neither shall ye commit adultery. You're not going to do that. And it's important to understand also, as he speaks there to a new generation, he adds this to that, which I think is instructive. He says, neither shalt thou covet thy neighbor's wife. That's a separate commandment. Coveting, to have that desire for your neighbor's wife, and that could be involved in the sexual relationship. It's got a double point here about adultery. We know God has taught that. Thou shalt not commit adultery. And if you've heard it said that, Jesus said, that's not accurate. I need to redefine it for you. No, it's accurate. It's accurate. But in contrast, he's going to say some things. In Leviticus, the 20th chapter, and verse 10, we'll read what the law said and what was involved in when it was practiced. He said, if the man that committeth adultery with another man's wife, even he that committeth adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress, two are involved here, shall surely be put to death. Now that's what the law said about it. Jesus doesn't bring that part in it, but he dealt with it before. John 8, here's a lady caught in the very act of adultery. And he wants to apply the law. Got two witnesses, they didn't have that to confirm it, and he told her, sin no more. So Jesus is not saying there's something wrong with that law and I'm going to redefine it or something. No, he doesn't. That said, you've heard it was said, but in contrast, I say to you that indeed, if you look upon a woman to lust after her in your heart, you committed adultery already with her. Does she go to death too? Is she adulteress too? She doesn't even know it. No, you, indeed, you're supposed to be not looking upon a woman to lust after. You commit adultery with her already in your heart. In Mark, the seventh chapter, we see a distinction between the very act of adultery or fornication and evil thoughts or lustful thoughts. It's in a total different context to say, well, I'm polluted because I don't eat with washing hands. And Jesus said, no, it's what comes out of you, not what goes in you. That's what pollutes man. And that becomes very important to understand. So with that thought in mind, we pick up, "For from within, out of the heart of men, evil thoughts proceed fornication." It didn't say evil thoughts are equal to fornication, or fornication is equal to evil thoughts. There's a distinction made by Jesus Christ. When he speaks about adultery, that would include violating the laws of marriage. And then realize at the same time, if we put away up for reasons other than fornication, which is a broad term denoting all sexual intercourse that is unlawful, not just between a married person. He broadens it. You're dealing with sex with animals, anything like that. That indeed, that's the only cause one could put away their marriages. We'll get to that at the end. But I want us to see a distinction. That indeed, the thoughts of the heart, they lead to the action of adultery, the intercourse and adultery and fornication. Jesus makes that distinction that we see here. And we'll see it also by Paul in this lesson as well. "I say to you, you look upon a woman to lust after her in your heart, you committed adultery already with her in your heart." So looking upon a woman to lust is what he begins to say. And what I want us to see here is that the eye, looking, the eye is the opening to the heart through the brain. Everything's together. The brain, the mind of man, the part of him, the spiritual part of him, and the physical eye comes to play in this idea of looking upon a woman to lust after her in your heart. I think it's interesting that when we look at the light, how quickly, when you're looking, you see an image, whether you like it or not, you're looking at me. And you see, I'm looking at an image. I'm picking up things, I'm picking up windows, I'm picking up a light shot in there, I'm picking up people, I see your faces. That takes fractions of a second. What's happening? Well, light hits that back part of your eye called the retina. And what happens then is that there are photoreceptors, they turn that light into electric signals. Electric signals. Now those signals are going through the optic nerve to the brain, and now you see. You see. And you can it's already recorded in your brain. And you can play it back and play it back and play it back and play it back and play it back if you want to. All starts with the eye. And that happens fractions of a second. That indeed those things can happen. You divide a second into 1,000. And 0.013 is how quick that changes of a second. Just, poof, it's quick. But that's our brain. God made us for that. And the wonderful eyes, the eyes that we have. But he says, Jesus understood this. He created us. And if you look, what do you look with? Our eyes. Where do you commit to sin? In my heart. Just because I'm thinking about it. That's what Jesus is addressing. And that becomes very important when we realize it wasn't just looking at a woman. And some of you know, so well, I can't even look at women. I've got to look around. Well, I don't know how you're ever going to get married if you're not going to look at a woman. And this makes us make a distinction there. Let's just say, for example, you live that life. I don't look at women. You know, you're always staring down. I don't know how you're ever going to marry someone, but let's get you in the marriage ceremony. Who giveth, or do you, we already done it. Father said, I've been looking at her. But do you take this woman to be your wedded wife? You go say, what woman? I don't see a woman. Because you never look at women. But you better look now. Do you take this woman to be your wedded? No, I am a Christian. I don't look at women. Well, you better look at who's standing before you now. That'd be absurd, wouldn't it? And looking at a woman, I want her to be my wife. And you look at her face, you look at her whole being, and really, that's a woman. You could do that without lusting, having those sexual desires. So he qualifies that. He didn't say who looks at woman, observes women, that they're pretty. That may be someone I might be romantically involved with one day. You could do that without the lusting that's taking place. But Jesus said that to lust after her, that's the problem in the look. You've already committed adult. Already you've done that because you were looking at her at a different way. So when we look at it, it's not just of seeing or observing that a woman exists. Same thing for women with men. It's not observing that. It's taking that step that can happen in a quick moment. People have looked in that field of gaze, our eyes gaze. What makes those eyes brighten up? Certain things, impulses can do that. And they've recognized that as far as the sexual relationship as well, and the sexual desires we might have. But there's gaze patterns. And you can be looking at someone there, recognizing, maybe looking at their face. That's a pretty girl. That's a handsome man. And in less than a second, you'll be looking at their body very quickly. The gaze. You could be looking at the body because there's the sexual desires that are now being brought forth. Just fractions of a second. And it's the gaze. You don't stare into someone's face and just keep staring. That can be uncomfortable. Because a lot of times there's that look. And would you think it's creepy if I just stared at you the whole sermon? No, we got less than 3 seconds I'm going to be looking. You look at their faces, but that'd make you feel uncomfortable. I'd be uncomfortable. And you don't want things to go that direction. What happened with David? He got out of his bed. He's up on top of the roof. And he looks over there and he sees a woman bathing. Here's the gaze. Here's the look. And it went very quickly at looking at her as a sexual being that he desired. And therefore, the idea of that gaze needs to be informed, because there are indeed gazing patterns. And we've got to avoid those things. And when we're in public, when we're around people, don't want to give those vibes at all. Because it's not looking. It's looking with lust in our hearts. And I see men. And I see when I'm walking, I see them at restaurants, I see them. They will give that gaze at a woman, and she doesn't even know he's looking. Maybe she does. I don't know. I know it. I see where his eyes go, and he stares. And the man of the world just kind of walks on by. He's got it recorded. Godly men don't do that. Godly women don't do that. We got to watch. What are our gaze patterns? We don't want to be giving the wrong vibes because we're looking. That indeed can happen. What we must do, we must guard our eyes to protect the heart. Now you know what's wrong with pornography. There could be a lot of things we say wrong with that. Because my eyes is the entryway into my heart. And my brain's going to be working. So I look at these pictures. And there's the sexual conduct. They're enticing those sexual feelings. That's what pornography does. And men, primarily, there are more men addicted to pornography than women. Affected by the eyesight and so forth. There may be those differences. But the point is that we want to guard our eyes. And that's one thing we will stay away from. But I've worked in the fields, I've worked in companies and so forth, and some lockers are just full of pornography. I'm not going to bring it home, but they'll look at it on the job when they have free time. teenagers hide them under the bed. They don't want anybody to know. But you know, mama cleans house sometime. You want that to be known? No, it's secret. It's my hidden pleasure, I guess. And you get pleasure out of that. All it is a picture. But it's leading those areas. That's why you stay away from that. Because my eyes are seeing that. I don't want my brain to be taking in something recording that you see there as a sexual relation, and you record it over and over again. That's the potential you have as human beings, men and women. We got to avoid adultery. How did Jesus deal with that? Let's get down to the look. Let's get down to where it all starts. And let's start protecting the eyes. David, you looked, and look all of the damage you did to yourself and to the people around you. Look where it led to with him. Just one look, a gaze, sexual in nature. And we got to realize we're in a spiritual battle. Galatians 5:17. Notice for the perspective that Paul is writing. And he says in verse 16 about the fact that we indeed are walking in the way of the Spirit. And so walk in the Spirit and you will not fulfill the lust of the flesh. Why? For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit. And here we are. And the Spirit lusteth. There's a one of desire that's not sinful. The idea of the Spirit lusteth against the flesh. And what's it? Why is that battle being there? That ye may not do the things that ye would. I want to serve the Lord, and all of a sudden, pornography hits you. I want to serve the Lord, and I'm going to commit adultery in my heart. No, it's a battle. It's a battle that has to be fought. And sometimes we think flesh and spirit, it's all, we don't have a battle. No, we got a spiritual battle. And Paul says that in Galatians 5. So I want us just to note a little bit about this battle and see how God wants us, especially young people that may be involved in these sexual desires that you might have when you're young, and of course when you're older too as well. But kind of give us a thing. First of all, we need to wise up to these things that attract our eye in an unlawful way. Paul says, Ephesians 4:22, put away concerning your former manner of life. Maybe you become a Christian. As a young teenager, you were involved in pornography or looking at things in sexual misconduct and so forth. But you're a Christian now. It's a battle to be fought. You are going to put away as concerning your former manner of life, the old man that waxeth corrupt after the lust of deceit. The lust of this deceit. That picture looking back at you in that pornography book is not, they don't care about you. They got paid to do what exactly? They're enticing people to do. They don't care about you. And yet you fall in love with the picture, sexually. You are waxed a crook at the lust of deceit, but be renewed, and you're going to be transformed and renewing of your mind. A Christian's different. We're fighting that battle. And a great proverb is a whole section of wising up. Here's a young man, beginning with verse 7. I beheld the simple ones. They haven't had the experiences of life. And so they're not prepared for this one. Of an impotent woman who kisses him strongly, thinking, you're the one I'm looking for. Hits his pride and ego. The sexual desires are there. I discern, one of the simple ones, I discern among the youths, a young man void of understanding, and he was passing through the street near her corner. He's getting ready to see her. And what does he see? I'll tell you how she dressed. There met him a woman with the attire of a harlot and a wily of heart. She gave the look. She sure does dress that way, doesn't she? Attire of a harlot. What's a harlot all about? Selling herself, selling her body for sexual gratification. And there's a young man with his hormones high, and he's walking near her street, and all of a sudden he's going to come in contact with her. Oh, not first sexually. She called him and kissed him with an impotent face and said to him, sacrifices of peace offerings are with me. This day have I paid my vow, therefore come forth to meet thee. She got a little religious flavor with this. That I need to share that meal with someone. I'd like it to be you. I've kissed you with an impotent face, strong. I spread my couch with carpentry and tapestry, with striped cloths of the yarn of Egypt. I perfume my bed. There's a sense of sight. There's a sense of smell. Come, let us take our fill of love unto the morning. Let us solace ourselves with lust, for the man is not at home, took away the danger. It's all open now. He's gone on a long journey. They didn't have airplanes back then. Long journey, may take a while, danger. He had taken a bag of money with him and shall come at the full moon. With her mouth, much fair speech, she causeth him to yield. With a flattering of her lips, see, it's a process. It doesn't take long, but it's a process. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter. It's not heaven, it's just a few moments away. She's going to the slaughter. And the wise man gets that when he's young. These proverbs were written for simple ones without experience. I'm speaking to people that have parents here. They're guiding them in the way you need to go. You may not have anybody to lead you in the way of God. Read your Bible and listen to this one point here. You need to wise up when it deals with this sexual sin matter and realize that if we're in a battle, I need to pay attention. I know the end from the beginning. I know the end from the beginning. Well, because I'm super. No, God is. God knows the end from the beginning. I like to listen to baseball games and watch the Astros. I got a friend the last few days that he can't get the radio I get. If you ever watch the, it becomes kind of tough. You watch a TV and I'm listening to the radio, I know the plays two pitches before it happens on TV. It drives me nuts. I had to turn one of them off, but it happens. So I call my friend up and say, good news is coming, because he's got 30 seconds delay. I said, it's fun being a prophet of good news. And he's just, and because I'm getting, I listen to radio, and the radio gets it first. And he's, we behind 2-0 last night, and all of a sudden, he was, well, I don't know if we're going to make it. And all of a sudden, I know a guy hits a 2-run homer. And I tell him, good news is coming. How did you know that? But we don't know that, do we? We don't know the end from the beginning. Only God does. That's why, parents, get your kids reading your Bibles and doing that. But those proverbs can help as you instruct in the way of righteousness. We're in a battle, and we're going to be fighting that. We need to avoid sinful stimuli. There's your pornography. And it could be a statue. You're going into the Italy or Rome and all of, and see statues, maybe unclothed statues. They may get the wrong thing. You've got to guard your eyes so you can guard your heart. But Paul says this in 2 Timothy 2:22 about young people, especially. He was a younger man. He says, flee youthful lust. Paul's writing to Timothy, a young man. He said, we need to flee youthful lust. You don't argue with it. You don't rationalize it. As some are saying about pornography today, well, here's my steps to recovery. And there may be some truth to this. I'll just take it down a notch. I won't do as much of it. Well, eventually you're going to have to kill it, as far as God is concerned. Put it to death. That's how God remedies it. Now I'll just kind of slow it down. It's always going to be there. And the point is that you when that happens, you're going to have to stop and realize that this can happen. So I need to flee. I don't argue with it, rationalize with it. I don't think about it. I'm going to flee youthful lust and follow after righteousness, faith, love, peace with them that call on the name of the Lord out of a pure heart. You get your heart pure with God. I want to do right before God. I will purify my heart. I'm not going to be tangling in with stimuli that leads me the wrong direction. That's how you battle it. As we read in Romans 13 and verse 14, we need to not give sin an opportunity to continue in our, to lead us in the wrong direction. And so we need to serve the Lord. That's a very positive thing to do. But put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make not provision for the flesh. Well, he's not saying, I need to make sure I have lunch today or supper. That's not talking about the flesh, but the lust, the desires of the flesh. Make no provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Now, it'd be wrong if we're gluttons. I don't understand food can have a part of it. But there's a sexual relationship here that we're talking about in the desires that we might have in our heart and our minds that are there for a purpose for sexual, but only through marriage. But don't make provisions. Don't give it an outpost so it can continue to work upon you. Job, the 31st chapter and verse 1, is such wise. I made a covenant with my heart that I will not look upon a virgin. I made a covenant with my heart. Talk to yourself. I'm want to be realized this could lead me there. I'm not going to look upon a woman in the wrong way. And to lust after, I've made a covenant with my heart. He said, well, that guy's crazy. He's making promises to himself. Yeah, that's not a bad way to live. Because it's going to be very helpful because you're going to need to resist. We've got to resist evil. James tells us in James, the 4th chapter in verse 7, where we've got to submit to God. He said, well, I want to do that. But what goes along with that? What goes along with that? He says in verse 7, subject yourself unto God, but also resist the devil. You submit to God, but you resist the devil, and he will flee from you. That's what God says about the devil. He ought to know. And he will come back another time, maybe. But at that moment, we need to be able to say no. And here's how those things can happen. Things can come up. You could be in apartment complexes. Maybe you're in an area where that's where you stay and go to school. You're all alone in your apartment. You got other people in the apartment. They say, come up here, I want you to watch a film with me. You got 5 seconds to deal with that problem. What's it going to lead to? Well, they're watching pornography. And you know that. You got 5 seconds or you'll be in there with them to say no. Say it to yourself. Tell them no. You don't have all day to think about that one because they'll get you. You've got to resist the devil. You got to say no. Colossians 3 and verse 5. Here he makes a distinction again between the sexual act of adultery and fornication and the evil thoughts. But Colossians 3 and verse 5, put to death therefore in your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire. He makes us, they're distinct. And covetous, and for which things cometh the wrath of God upon the sons of disobedience. So you put away the idea of covetousness, not to covet your neighbor's wives, as we've been looking today, but fornication. But also put away evil desire. And Jesus is taking us to, he was expanding this idea of avoiding adultery, and he expands it to the point where you're involved in realizing that I've got to resist. I don't want to give in to my evil desire that will cause me to commit fornication. There are people today that think fornication is a reason for putting away someone in marriage. I don't think so. Two passages, what Jesus said and what Paul said. They make a distinction. You go to hell for evil desires. You go to hell looking at pornography. That's not an excuse to putting one away in marriage. That's the adultery as the woman was caught in the very act. And it always involved two people there that was responsible. The one you're looking at down the street, she doesn't know. But you have committed adultery with her already in your heart. Notice he had to stress the heart because it's not the way the term is usually used when we speak about divorce and remarriage. But wise up, avoid and resist. Can you remember that? It's called war. It's called war. It's the spiritual warfare that ought to be on our minds as we deal with this problem of adultery. And what Jesus is saying in verses 29 and 30 is that this, your soul is worth all the effort. You want to do some reasoning? Jesus will reason with you. He said, you're not to commit adultery. That's the wrong thing to do. But he said, he just reasons with a little bit to think about this. Now it says, if thy right eye causes thee to stumble, pluck it out. There's warfare. That's what I'm seeing. It causes me to sin. Well, to mutilate yourself is not his point. But notice the right eye. That's always a place of honor. Something that is very honorable to you, that's very important to you. Be willing to cast it aside from you. For what reason? For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not thy whole body to be cast into hell. That's his point. The whole body, I'll get rid of that which is causing me to stumble. It's better to go without the eye here, and the body's not complete, for the whole body be cast into hell. And he's able to cast both soul and body in hell. That's God. And your soul is worth that, even to get rid of the things that you think are so honorable to you. He stresses again now with the hand. If thy right hand causes thee to stumble, cut it off. Not to mutilate yourself, but to cut it off and cast it away from thee. For it's profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish and the whole body to go to hell. And he's trying to say, hell is that bad and your soul is worth so much. It's worth more than having an eye or a hand, your soul. Don't let something get in the way of that, because he didn't say God's going to be angry with you. He didn't say you're not going to be the type of person you ought to be. You'll be cast, body, soul, in hell. And there he uses that Gehenna. It is a place of fire. It was the fires that were continuing south of Jerusalem. Jesus could point to that. The fires never burn out because it's a garbage hump deep. It's where they worshiped idolatry in Jeremiah's day and offered up their children to fire. It's a place that's not holy, but the fires are burning. You'll be cast into hell. And young people, your soul is worth more than that look at that pornography or that media where you're getting your pictures. Because it's a box. So Jesus talked about that when he talked about the sin of adultery. But what he does, and we need to think about this, and we'll close. He takes us from there, and he said, while I'm on the subject, I'm adding that to you, but while he's there, it was said also. He's going back to this contrast. But now we'll deal with divorce and remarriage and where that leads to. It leads to adultery. What he calls adultery. And what we begin to see in these two verses is, first of all, it was said, and a point, well, is this right? If you turn me to Deuteronomy, the 24th chapter, you'll find exactly that this is right. But Jesus is going to make a contrast to this. It says, thou shalt not do so. No, he said, when? This is dealing with a situation. And give you a little background here. There were people just divorcing for any reason. And what God is doing as he's preparing for the time when Jesus would come along and his teaching will be that will supersede the law of Moses. But it would slow it down. Notice how it would slow it down. Of divorce, because that's what God hates, divorce, Malachi. When a man taketh a wife and marrieth her, when it shall be she find no favor in his eyes, because he hath found some unseemly thing in her. So I don't like her anymore because something unseemly. You say, well, first of all, she committed fornication. No, she dies if she committed fornication of the law of Moses. She dies. And the one she's having an affair with dies. You don't need to give a bill of divorce. But it meant something that was unseemly, like maybe immodest apparel was there. She appeared before others in a way that I didn't like, the way she dressed. Something unseemly. Of course, the Jews of Jesus' day burnt the toast, put them away. Or there was also the Jew, there was no reason for divorce. But she was to write, he was to write a bill of divorcement if you're going to send her away. He didn't say he condemned it. We know he hates it. But this was dealing with, here's the situation. You give her the bill of divorcement so she could be another man's wife under the law. But you need to think about what you're doing. I think this is where I'm putting it here. Because in verse 3, if the latter husband hate her and write her a bill of divorcement and give it to her head and send her out of his house, or if the latter husband die, who took her to be his wife, her former husband, who sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife. After that, she's defiled. You sent her away, that's unseemly. Give her a bill of divorce. You can never have her back again. So what would that be telling me? You better make sure you never want her to have it back again. It wouldn't cause you just mad because she burnt the toast. You can't have her back. You're not going to defile the land that way under the law of Moses. But this is an abomination before Jehovah. And thou shalt not cause the land to sin which Jehovah God given thee for inheritance. That's under the law of Moses. Now today, we know that that law of Moses is not being brought over in the New Testament, because we could be reconciled to the husband or reconciled to the wife who was sent away. You could be reconciled to her. We know at the point of death, we're no longer bound in marriage. And so there's the differences that there. It's not Jesus is reinterpreting the law of Moses. No. And here he just says, that's what I said. If you're going to put away, give her a bill of divorce. But I say unto you, and what do I say unto you? Fornication is the only reason for divorce. That's a broader term than adultery, which indeed is going against and breaking up that marriage and so forth and not living up to your responsibilities in that marriage relationship. Fornication is the act that is very broad. Any type of unlawful sexual intercourse, it's under fornication. That's why if you're married, you put away for fornication. That means it's fornication that you had before you got married. No, because after you married, it's all adultery. Fornication was there for a purpose with married people, because it was indeed a general term of any illicit sexual intercourse. And to divorce without a cause, you make her an adulteress. See, she wasn't guilty of adultery, but you made her one. Look, read it yourself. You made her an adulteress. Why? Because the next step she takes sexually makes her an adulteress, because she can only be married to you for life. You make her an adulteress. What's that doing? It's not the old law making me think twice. It's that I don't want to put her in a position of losing her soul and the soul that marries her. Because that's also involved. There are two souls on their way to hell because of your initial action. So that would sober one up about just flipping divorce if you want to serve the Lord. But it's not reinterpreting the law of Moses. Never was. That's not the point of this section. He's expanding on it. And what he's doing is helping us to guard what leads to that. Here's divorce for a cause that's not for fornication. You're leading them to involve it, be it in adultery. So we find here we need to avoid adultery. It's what Jesus does. He expands the subject to include unlawful sexual desires, beginning where? Entering the heart. Because he looks, takes it, it's the look. It's that first action. Guard your eyes. And then Jesus is also expanding on the fact of divorce. Dealing with adultery, dealing with unlawful divorces that leads souls to being lost eternally in hell. And that is so horrible. And godly people need to think about that. There's only one reason for divorce, that we can scripture put someone away. But that wasn't being practiced. So Jesus said, I'm making a contrast. But that's why I titled this Avoiding Adultery. Thou shalt not commit adultery. I want to avoid adultery. Start with our eyes. Leads to the heart. Brain records it. And those pictures are ones that you have, and you're going to fight that battle. It's a war against our flesh. And we've got to kill those sexual desires that are unlawful. as we live as sexual people and having our children and so forth in marriage. This morning, if you're not a Christian, I want to encourage you to become one, because there's no other way unto heaven than through Jesus Christ. He said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father in heaven but by me. And what Jesus is saying is how we can live a holy life, and we can. But we must understand the teachings of the law and of the Lord, and adultery, how we handle the sexual desires. God is teaching us, and I hope we'll be stronger that way. But that's the life of a Christian. It leads to heaven. You'll never regret becoming one. If we can help you do that this morning, come as we stand and as we sing.